During my senior year of high school, I used to ride to Langston Church on Sunday morning with three boys from my class. Richard Tisdale was one of the only two boys that lived close enough to my house that I could ride my bike there. Harold Jensen and I were the same size, small. We wrestled with each other in gym class in the 95-pound weight class. John Rehaus was a nephew of Big Jess Rehaus, a great piano player who taught me how to play the boogie woogie. Big Jess worked at the local post office and was the manager of the band I played organ in. The Soul Generation performed many times at colleges with a band called The Pack. Later, they would move to New York and change their name to the Grand Funk Railroad. One of our first jobs was playing at the Crystal Lake Palladium. It was built during the 1930s by gangster Al Capone. It was his private ballroom in the trees of Michigan, far away from Chicago. We had to carry all the equipment up these wide stairs that opened up in the middle of this enormous ballroom. One Sunday morning, I slept in after getting home late from playing with the band. It was a long drive back home after we got done playing for a fraternity party at the college in Mount Pleasant. To this day, I can still hear Carolyn talking to Richard at the door. Carolyn said,
"Ronnie is not coming today." "Nope. He was out too late with that band."
These are the last words I heard Richard say. "Okay, thanks." After I had a little more sleep, I drove to band practice. We were allowed to rehearse in the town hall in Lakeview up the stairs above the fire trucks. On the way there, I passed a car accident. As I drove past the open door of the hospital ambulance, I saw someone hurt and a woman inside. When I got to rehearsal, other kids were already there watching the band practice. Shortly after I arrived, one of them told me that my mother was outside and she wanted to see me right away. Carolyn did not approve of anything to do with the band. She disapproved of the boys in the group. Sometimes I had someone that was not in the band come pick me up and take me to band practice so I would not hurt her feelings. I knew how hard it was for her to come there. Something must be very wrong. I rushed down the long stairs leading from the second story to the ground floor. And there was my mother on the sidewalk in a panic mode as she told me,
"I had to come up and see if you were here."
I did not have to answer her because she knew that I was where I told her I would be when I left. Then she said this,
"There was an accident just now. We heard the crash. Only about a half mile north of the house on M-91.
As she stopped to catch her breath, her sigh of relief upon seeing me was easy to see in her eyes. Then Carolyn told me the rest of her story before she hurried back to her home.
"Richard and John have just been killed in a car crash after leaving the church."
She could only speak in short gasps of words.
"Their car went off the road and broadsided a tree. They identified two of the boys, but they were not sure if the little guy was you or someone else."
She walked away saying to herself,
"A half a mile from home. A half a mile from home. A half a mile from home."
As Carolyn drove away, I knew the Lord had protected me in some very unique way again. This moment in time left a scar on my brain that I still feel today. I usually rode with these boys on the way to church. I knew that I could easily have been riding with them that day. There was a time I felt some resentment by just a few.
Why them and not you?
Some people in the church did not approve of drums and music or me playing in a band. I had the emptiest feeling as I thought about the mothers and families of my friends. But the Lord has the power to heal all things, and He did. No one knew at the time I was dyslexic or struggled with ADHD. Schools were unaware of learning disorders like that. I feel so sorry for Pat because he tried so hard to teach me how to spell, and I never could, and I still can't. After failing another spelling test, he was so disturbed with me that he scolded me, saying,
"How could you get so many wrong after all the time I put into your homework?"
He thought he had the solution and instructed me.
"I want you to write all your spelling words 50 times.
As he handed me the pencil and paper. My penmanship has always been poor, but I wrote each word so it was legible. Many minutes later, when I was done writing, Pat looked at my work and then turned the paper over and asked me to spell each word. He was in shock when I got so many of them wrong after writing each one of them so many times. He yelled at me, saying,
"I now think you're playing stupid on purpose and you're trying to play dumb."
I'm sure that Pat felt bad that day, and so did I. Lucky for me, in the 7th grade, my spelling and English teacher, Mrs. Gunther, pulled me out in the hall one day after failing another spelling test. She knew what kind of a reception I would get when I got home, and she said,
"Ronnie, let me tell you something."
She went on to say,
"We have today, in our society, doctors and lawyers that we know are very smart people, and they cannot spell either. Maybe you are like one of those smart people, and you will never be able to spell. So do your best, and thank anybody that tries to help you. And I believe in you."
I found out years later why I cannot spell, but I'm sure Pat never did. Mrs. Gunther changed my path in life when she used those 4 words, "I believe in you." She taught me that even though all people are different, there are some of us that are just alike. This was around the time I first got exposed to tobacco. She gave me self-confidence, and I turned away from the fellows that smoked in the bathroom, and I started hanging out with the kids that were good in the classroom.